Neo Goes Green and investigates the humor of environmental issues with the help of Alfred Marx.
You know, Frank, my uncle died of lead poisoning.
No.
Yes, someone shot him.
Mummy, can I go into the sea for a swim?
No, dear, the sea's far too dirty and polluted.
But Daddy's swimming.
Yes, darling, well, he's insured, you see. What did the politically correct write on roast beef and potatoes do at Sunday lunch?
I don't know, Alfred. What did the politically correct write on roast beef and potatoes do at Sunday lunch?
They joined the Greens. Do you want to know what the water in the Mediterranean is like these days?
Oh, yes, rather.
Hang on a minute, I'll go and get you a slice. Do you know the latest thing they've done with genetic engineering? They've crossed a parrot with a gorilla.
Oh, is it a good talker?
Doesn't say much, but when it does, you listen. Do you remember the good old days, Frank?
Oh, yes, Alfred.
When you used to be able to go off into the countryside and have a picnic?
Oh, yeah.
And know that the black specks on your food were pepper?
Well done, Alfred. The last one was a real joke. Now, this is a special program, as you've probably gathered, all about the environment. We did contemplate a few other titles, but eventually decided that Frank Muir Goes Green was marginally more wholesome than Frank Muir Goes Into Toxic Waste. Recognizing the importance of preserving our environment is not a recent phenomenon. But over the last 2,000 years, those principles have been rather neglected, with devastating results. In the words of Jean-Jacques Rousseau,
everything is perfect coming from the hands of the Creator. Everything degenerates in the hands of men.
And here's a thought from the American mathematician Norbert Wiener.
The more we get out of the world, the less we leave, and in the long run, we shall have to pay our debts at a time that may be very inconvenient for our own survival.
And that point was amplified by Rose Elizabeth Byrd, whom I hardly need to remind you was the first woman Chief Justice of California.
We have probed the earth, excavated it, burned it, ripped things from it, buried things in it. That does not fit my definition of a good tenant. If we were here on a month-to-month basis, we would have been evicted long ago.
Modern agricultural methods have a lot to answer for as well. Written and performed by Jeremy Taylor. The world's been rather slow to wake up to the needs of ecology, but gradually attitudes are improving. Irma Bombeck from dear old America charted the change of approach in her own family.
Ecology became a household word. My husband became a nut on recycling. Until a few years ago, he thought recycling was an extra setting on the washer that tore the buttons off his shirts and shredded his underwear. Now he sits around making towel racks out of oversexed coat hangers.
Yes, nowadays everyone's aware of the problem of waste and of the need for everything to be recycled and reused. And there's a lot of research going on into new energy-efficient engineering ideas. Here's a report from the magazine Electrical Engineering.
Lamps must be long enough to be efficient, and the average length is likely to increase.
prolonged deliberation at one laboratory has produced the following rule of maximum lamp length. No lamp shall be longer than the maximum dimension of the room it is intended to fit.
So you can't argue with that. And agricultural researchers are also busy developing new products to play their part in the ecological chain.
But the Imperial Institute has great faith in the new rotational crop that we have developed. And I think this will be of enormous benefit to agronomists all over the world. Now, this crop is called dingleweed and is comparatively easy to grow in practically any soil. There is only one slight trouble, and that is that when the dingleweed is young and about 3 or 4 weeks old and has first burst through the soil, it has to be protected from the harmful ultraviolet rays of the sun. And we protect it by laying over the top of it this thick matting. And that completely protects it from these harmful ultraviolet rays. Now, when the young dingleweed is about a year old, it is then ready for harvesting. It's over 7 feet high by that time. It's a very quick-growing crop. And it's harvested by our special team of scientists who then take it down to the processing factory where the dingleweed is slubbed and groined. And this groining process consists of dipping it in acetic acid, putting it through a throbbing machine, and then finally weaving it into its end product. It is, of course, woven into this thick matting, which is used to protect the young dingleweed from the harmful ultraviolet rays of the sun.
Was, of course, Michael Benteen. The main opposition to ecological thinking has traditionally come from human greed, particularly the profit motives of industrialists. If your business is a manufacture of cars, then selling as many of them as possible is bound to matter more to you than thoughts of the effect your products might be having on the environment. Here's a comment from the American journalist Sidney J. Harris.
As the horsepower in modern automobiles steadily rises, the congestion of traffic steadily lowers the possible speed of your car. This is known as progress.
And a typically sweeping statement from our own dear George Bernard Shaw.
Science is always wrong. It never solves a problem without creating 10 more.
The industrialist or anti-environmentalist point of view was forcibly expressed by none other than Harley J. Waller, president of the American National Refractory and Brake Company.
If all these nature kooks had the way, America would still be a wilderness from coast to coast. Thank God there are at least a few businessmen who care about the gross national product.
Thank heavens there are also people around to resist that kind of attitude. Mind you, the proposals of environmentalists are not always totally convincing. A suggestion from a letter to the Daily Mirror.
Why should the ingenious and often beautiful art of camouflage be confined to the uses of war? A gasworks need be no less efficient because it has the appearance from a distance of a beautiful forest.
Yes, you see his point. And here's an idea for improving hygiene on public transport. Also from the Daily Mirror.
Dandruff may be contracted by resting the head against infected upholstery in railway carriages. I suggest, therefore, that railway carriages should be boiled for 20 minutes at each station.
Very good. Very good idea, but you need an enormous non-stick saucepan. Scientists are frequently under fire for the dreadful things they do to the environment and the depletion of natural resources caused by their efforts. But it's not only natural resources that are at risk.
Hi, I am not a professional actress. I am a real person like yourself. I'm not here to sell you a product, but to give you some good consumer advice. Most of us are aware of our diminishing supply of natural resources. But did you know we are also running short on unnatural resources? Until recently, I, like so many of you, thought that surely there was enough plastic in the world to go around. Apparently, this is not true. You hear all this talk about saving trees. Well, trees can be grown. With plastics, you have to start from scratch. To say we are up a creek without a paddle will be truer than ever, since paddles are now made of polyvinyl chloride. you may be saying, is this a real crisis or just something the plastics industry trumped up to raise the price of plastics? Well, I am sorry to be the one to tell you that this is a genuine synthetic crisis. If something isn't done, there could be a panic on plastics. Vinyl leopard skin will become an endangered synthetic. Bonnets, shower curtains, astroturf, spatulas, plastic toothpicks, parcheesi dice, and leisure suits. Tupperware parties will have to be shut down. Studies show that over 2/3 of game show gift items are made of some form of plastic. Wandering and start conserving our unnatural resources, there will be an end to civilization as we know it.
That's the wonderful Lily Tomlin. Now, our modern environment is so full and cluttered that it's easy to lose sight of real nature. And Ogden Nash has a parodic comment to make on one particular kind of urban blight.
I think that I shall never see a billboard lovely as a tree. Indeed, unless the billboards fall, I'll never see a tree at all.
Fortunately, though, there are planning authorities around to prevent the worst kinds of blots on our landscape. Here's a clipping near home from the Esher News.
An appeal against Esher Council's refusal to allow an illuminated sign at Hearst Service Station, East Molesey, has been allowed by the Minister of Housing and Local Government, subject to certain conditions. One is that the sign shall not be illuminated.
Here's another one from the old Daily Graphic.
Mr. Samuel added that the number of new overhead wires would be comparatively small and placed underground.
Trouble is, however busy the authorities are keeping our countryside clean, there seem always to be people around determined to make it dirty again.
You're walking in the country, far from villages or towns, when you're 7 miles from nowhere and beyond. In some dark, deserted forest or a hollow of the downs, you may come across a lonely pool or pond.
And you'll always find a big brass broken bedstead for the bank. There's one in every lock or mirror or bed. Don't think it's there by accident. It's us you have to thank, the Society of British Bedstead Men. Oh, the Hammerponds of Sussex and the Dewponds of the West are a part of Britain's heritage, the part we love the best. Every eel and fish and mill pond has a beauty all can share, but not unless it's got a big brass broken bedstead there. So we filch them out of attics, we beg them from our friends, we buy them up in auction lots with other odds and ends. Then we drag them across the meadows where the moon is in the sky. So watch the wall, my darling, while the bedstead men. The League of British Bedstead Men is marching. The night, a desperate and dedicated group, under cover of the hedges, always keeping out of sight, for the precious load of bedsteads must get through. The Society for Putting Broken Bedsteads into Ponds has another solemn purpose to fulfill. Coastal sands and beaches, or where waving willow wands mark the borders of a river, stream, or rill. You'll always find a single laceless left-hand leather boot. Our bootless British riverbanks are shock.
We leave them there at midnight. You can track a member's route by the alternating prints of boot and sock.
The Lily Ponds of Suffolk and the Mill Ponds of the West are part of Britain's heritage, the part we love the best. Our river banks and seashores have a beauty all can share, provided there's a boot, provided there's a boot, provided there's at least one boot.
Three treadless tires, a half-eaten pork pie, some oil drums, an old felt hat, a lorry load of tar blocks,
and the broken beds and there.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swann, of course. As ever, such wit and charm. Wonderful. Concern for the environment carries over into all aspects of our lives, even what we eat. And there are many who would argue that a change of diet would improve our health and help save our planet at the same time. Some of our common foods are pretty unnatural. Here's a thought from the consumerist Ralph Nader.
If God meant us to eat sugar, he wouldn't have invented dentists.
But food fads can prompt strong opposition. Finlay Peter Dunne's homespun character, Mr. Dooley, an Irish Mr. Dooley, was not in favor of vegetarianism.
Most vegetarians I ever see look enough like their food to be classed as cannibals.
I thought I'd mention that he was Irish in case it wasn't immediately apparent. The New York humorist, Fran Lebowitz, wasn't very keen on following the right diet either.
Thoroughly distasteful as synthetic foods might be, one cannot help but accord them a certain value when confronted with a health food buff. One is also ever mindful of the fact that the aficionado of whole foods is a frequent champion of excessive political causes. Brown rice is ponderous, overly chewy, and possessed of unpleasant religious overtones. Civilized adults do not take apple juice with dinner. Bread that must be sliced with an axe is bread that is too nourishing. Large, naked, raw carrots are acceptable as food only to those who live in hutches eagerly awaiting Easter.
Here's another bit of shrewd dietary advice from Robert Orban.
Old people shouldn't eat health foods. They need all the preservatives they can get.
You liked that one, didn't you? Let's move on to hear a sad saga of nature rid in tooth and claw. The story of yet another of our environment's endangered species.
Only 5 years for our cameramen to get these shots of a now extinct desert shrigaloo emerging from his egg 25 feet below the surface of the Yakahoola Desert. Yes, 25 feet. Surely one of nature's strangest quirks. He's not a very handsome little fella, is he? But he's got a heart as big as all outdoors. Watch him as he starts his long and arduous climb to ground level, following a deep-rooted instinct that is one of nature's strongest. Munch, munch, little shrigaloo. Climb, climb, little shrigaloo. Only a few feet to go now, and he'll be there. One more inch, and yes, he's made it. And now he looks at the great prairie night all around him. The shrigaloo's only enemy is the prairie kumquat. Find him one of nature's tastiest morsels. And that, as far as we know, was the last of the desert shrigaloo. And considering his rather specialized diet, it's quite likely that that was also the last of the prairie kumquat. Truly, one of nature's tragedies.
More, of course, from Michael Benteen. Now, endangered species are big news these days, leading to headlines like this from a North London newspaper.
Panda mating fails, vet takes over.
Well, as the headline writers can usually be relied on to say something that isn't quite what they meant, here's one from a medical journal.
Genetic engineering splits scientists.
Another from one of the Quality Sundays.
Cause of global warming, politicians and scientists talk.
And finally, a misprinted notice from an ecology group's headquarters.
Cut down on aerosols. Think of the ozone lawyer.
Nowadays, one hopes that people are more conscious of the world around them and at least try to put up buildings which complement the environment. The French architect, Le Corbusier, had a proper sense of priorities about his work.
The materials of city planning are sky, space, trees, steel and cement in that order and in that hierarchy.
But America's Frank Lloyd Wright...
A doctor can bury his mistakes, but an architect can only advise his client to plant vines.
Mind you, vines wouldn't cover everything. And of course, vines could be poisoned by some of the toxins that threaten to stifle our environment. The kind of stuff that's mentioned in this report from the Widnes Weekly News.
I think we're stifling initiative here, said Councillor R. Illidge, criticizing the action of the Highways Committee of the Widnes Town Council meeting on Tuesday night in refusing an application from a local firm to pump waste acid over a public footpath.
There have always been worries about poisons we might unknowingly expose ourselves to. The quality of the water in our taps causes particular anxiety. Here's a report from the old Daily Herald.
About to christen a girl, the Reverend R.G. Cruikshank, rector of Deer Ferrer, South Devon, found tadpoles in the font. Now he's leading villagers in demanding a better water supply.
They should collect the tadpoles because they turn into butterflies, don't they? And comparable concern was shown by the character Veronica in Alan Bennett's play The Old Country.
The Mediterranean, not anymore, dear, is the Elsanne of Europe.
For more on this unwholesome and unattractive subject, let's turn to Tom Lehrer.
Time was when an American about to go abroad would be warned by his friends or the guidebooks not to drink the water. But times have changed, and now a foreigner coming to this country might be offered the following advice.
If you visit American City, you will find it very pretty. Just two things of which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution, pollution, they got smog and sewage and mud. Turn on your tap and get hot and cold running crud. The halibuts and the sturgeons are being wiped out by detergents. Fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly, but they don't last long if they try. Pollution, pollution, you can use the latest toothpaste and then rinse your mouth with industrial waste. Just go out for a breath of air, and you'll be ready for Medicare. The city streets are really quite a thrill. If the hoods don't get you, the monoxide will. Pollution, pollution, wear a gas mask and a veil. Then you can breathe, long as you don't inhale. Lots of things there that you can drink, but stay away from the kitchen sink. The breakfast garbage that you throw into the bay, they drink at lunch in San Jose. So go to the city, see the crazy people there, like lambs to the slaughter. They are drinking the water and breathing the air.
Tom Lehrer, of course. And as we edge our way to the end of the program, let's hear a couple of general observations. First one from Ogden Nash.
Progress might have been all right once, but it's gone on too long.
And here's an anonymous scrawl of graffiti.
If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, perhaps you've misunderstood the situation.
Hang on. That's nothing to do with green.
No? Well, what about this one, then? If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, you'll be taller.
That's better.
Oh, good.
Finally, helpful advice for those of you agonizing about an appropriate present to give in these environmentally conscious days. Here's an advert from the Harwich and Dover Court Standard.
Ladies, treat hubby to a tip cart load of manure.
And that's it for this special green program. I think we'd better be off, Alfred.
Oh, yes, we've got to conserve our energy, you know.
Certainly have. From both of us, goodbye.
Muir Goes Green was presented by Frank Muir with the help of Alfred Marx. The script was recycled by Simon Brett, and the program was produced in an environmentally friendly manner by Richard Edis.
Get those birds out of here.